Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Awesome, like podcasts and stuff?
I've seen people with podcasts less desperate for approval.
I hope this isn't about your podcast again.
Please, podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Welcome to the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Ben Heisler.
What is good? It's the Awful Announcing Podcast, finally back after a little hiatus. Ben Heisler with you for the first Awful Announcing Podcast of 2019. An old friend in a new place, formerly of Yahoo Sports for 13 plus years, and now he is ESPN's new MLB insider, Jeff Passan. He's going to join us for lots of stories, his new gig, and all that comes with being the Adam Schefter and Adrian Wojnarowski of Major League Baseball over at the Worldwide Leader. I also want to know if they've built a John Clayton-type studio inside his house yet, or after he's done with his hit on SportsCenter or something, he just lets his ponytail down and starts blasting Wu-Tang Clan in his son's room on full blast. But, Jeff is always a fascinating guy to talk to, and he was part of my other podcast, the Fantasy Sports Markets podcast, as well as a weekly guest all of last season. We both live in Kansas City, and he's a friend and really fun guy to have on the show. So I think you guys will all really enjoy our conversation. But before we get to Jeff, we here at the Awful Announcing Podcast have a new sponsor that I, as somebody who enjoys a good wager from time to time, can fully get on board with. It is now the Awful Announcing Podcast presented by our friends at BetDSI. And I had actually heard about them through my buddy Alex Gold, who's a great talk show host over at SB Nation Radio in Houston. And I just made an account this week when I found out that they were going to be the new sponsor of the podcast. And this is definitely where I think I want to play for everything on the wagering side online. They literally have betting options for everything. They have NFL, they have college, NBA, NHL, UFC, golf. There's even bets and props for politics and reality TV. And as you guys know, I'm big into The Bachelor. So as long as Reality Steve hasn't spoiled it yet, there might be some bets that I'm going to be hopping on Monday night. They're the top-rated site on all the betting review sites. Super easy interface. Their mobile site is great, especially if you want to get a little bit of action away from your computer. Or if you're doing a little bit of live betting, too. Personal shout out to the Sacramento Kings from last night. And they have over 20 years experience paying winners fast and easy. And for Awful Announcing Podcast listeners, you guys get a 100% bonus match when you go to betdsi.com and use the promo code AWFUL100 altogether. AWFUL 100. So you go, deposit, say, $100. They will match that 100. And again, AFC, NFC Championship Sunday coming up. This is a great time to jump in. It's promo code AWFUL100 at BetDSI.com. Remember, it's only a game until you bet it at BetDSI. You can follow us. We are at Awful Announcing on Twitter. If you'd like to follow me, you can do so at Benny Heiss. Also, please take a second to rate and review the podcast so that more people can find this podcast. We're available on the Awful Announcing page as well as on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and wherever all your other podcasts are found. You can find the Awful Announcing Podcast right there. So without further ado, here's my conversation with the new Major League Baseball insider at ESPN and also the author of The Arm, Jeff Passan. ESPN's Jeff Passan. You gotten used to it yet?
Nope. I will be honest. I have written at least twice league sources tell Yahoo Sports, and I've had to delete that and go back and change it to ESPN because it's like breaking a 13-year habit is not easy.
No, I still get 2019 wrong.
I was just going to say, it's like when you get into the new year and you get the year wrong, except I've been on the same year for 13 years at this point.
What's been the biggest change from going to working at a place like Yahoo to working like a place at ESPN?
You know, they're similar in so many regards. Like the actual job itself is very similar. The goal is to figure out what's actually happening in the sport. It's not necessarily to figure out like granular transactions or not necessarily to figure out bigger trends, but to try and understand all of those things at the same time and put them out in clear, concise, accurate fashion. The difference, I think, between Yahoo and ESPN is the scope. ESPN is a monolith. It is like the towering force in the entire sporting world. The one thing that connects baseball and basketball and football and college sports and soccer and all of the other elements that are surrounding it, whether it's the legal parts, the business parts, the medical parts, this whole amazing world of sports. And ESPN's right in the middle of all of it. And you feel that from the moment that you get there. You feel it from the way that you can tell people really, truly, deeply care. Like, that this job is as important to them as anything, and they want to get it right. And the excitement that comes with that and the pressure that comes with that, knowing that you have a bunch of people, and by a bunch, I don't just mean dozens, but hundreds, thousands, who are devoted to the same thing. I mean, I felt that camaraderie and family at Yahoo for a long time. This is just on a much grander scale and a much larger scope.
So are you trying to like figure out this balance between the level of excitement to reaching this major audience compared to now dealing with the pressure of having this larger audience? Is that all sort of intertwined together? Like, are you embracing it? Are you nervous? Is it a combination of both?
Yes. And you know what? Like, social media democratized things. Because if you had good information, it didn't matter what the size of your platform was, you were going to be able to distribute it regardless.
Right.
But that doesn't take away the importance of platform when you do have it. And the size of ESPN's platform is exponentially larger than every other outlet out there. It's, you know, let's take the Kyler Murray story that's going on right now, for example. When I was at Yahoo, I would chase it. I would file it. I might do a video hit on it, and I'd probably get some calls from radio stations for it. Last night comes around, and I file the story that I've got, and it immediately goes on the bottom line. And, you know, I get a call, hey, we need you to be on with Scott Van Pelt tonight. And I get another email, hey, we'd like you to be on tomorrow morning with the 7 a.m. Sports Center. And when I'm there taping that, did your power go out today, by the way?
No, I've been able to keep my power in the Overland Park area. I've been lucky.
Yes. We had 40, like, for the many listening who do not live in Kansas City, I live in a part of town that has above ground power lines. It's sort of an older neighborhood. And so we are typically the first to lose power. We somehow, in this amazing snowstorm, had not lost power yet until 5 o'clock this morning. So the first time I'm going on Morning Sports Center, I am getting dressed and doing my hair in the dark and showering in the dark. And I have no idea what I look like. And I didn't even check my email. So I didn't see that they wanted me to jump on GetUp for an instant analysis. And, you know, I'm headed to do Outside the Lines in an hour from now. And I'm going to be doing SportsCenter at 6 o'clock tonight. Like, the volume is enormous. And the grind is very real. But it is exciting. It is invigorating. It's thrilling. It's challenging. It's fun as hell. And I'm 2 weeks into it, and I still have a smile on my face.
So it is sort of what you imagine the new gig would be.
I think the speed is probably – I feel like the high school kid who got recruited by the SEC, and I get there, and I see the speed, and I'm like, whoa! Like, like, I know I can play with this.
Right.
But it takes a minute to get used to, because you know what? Like, Adam Schefter is so good at what he does, and Adrian Wojnarowski is so good at what he does. And I've seen Woj, you know, I worked with Woj for a decade at Yahoo. So mm-hmm. I've seen it, but I don't think I appreciated it until that was the mandate. And that was the idea that I'm going to come in and my role is going to be like that. And when news happens, I will hear from it. Like, if I don't have it, then I will hear from someone there saying, can you get this, or do you have it, or, you know, figure it out. And it's like, okay, got to go. Doesn't matter where I am. Doesn't matter what I'm doing. Drop it and figure this out. And it's great.
We've known each other for a while, so it's sort of strange to get biographical with you, but I will, because I think it sort of leads up to this point. Do you remember the first time you ever broke a story, and when you first started writing, when you first tracked down into the world of journalism, did you think this was going to be the avenue that you wanted to pursue, or did you just, you loved baseball and you wanted to write about baseball? It was the breaking news that came later.
You know, back when I went to college at Syracuse, and back when I was in college, I did not appreciate what news was. I grew up reading Gary Smith in Sports Illustrated and finding his words to be incredible and poignant and sort of a window into the human condition, and maybe a little bit overwrought, but it didn't matter to me because it was so pretty. I really did not care. And I was like, I want to be like Gary Smith. And pretty much everyone I went to college was the same way. And Eli Saslow, who started writing for the Daily Orange sports section when I was the sports editor, and Greg Bishop, who's now at Sports Illustrated, was the assistant sports editor, has won a Pulitzer Prize writing those, like, flowery he writes like incisive, sad, horrible, makes you want to cry type pieces.
Yeah.
And I thought that's what I was gonna do, and for a long time my ability to string words together they got me to great places. You know, I started off in Fresno, California. I got hired to write features, really, but Eric Prisbell, the great reporter who was on Fresno State at the time, started investigating academic fraud, and they needed a Fresno State beat writer. So I got on that job, and I broke a couple stories here and there. I always looked at it, I'm not going to say as a nuisance, but more as something that I had to do than something that I really enjoyed doing.
And what time frame was this, by the way?
This was back in 2002 and 2003.
Okay.
So I was 21 and 22 years old at that point.
Okay.
I got hired at the Kansas City Star when I was 23, I believe. I might be 24. Because Dick Cagle had just gone to MLB.com. Bob Dutton had moved over from the national job to cover the Royals at the Star, and they needed a national baseball writer. And I was young, I was cheap, and I would work hard. And thankfully, somebody else turned down that job because he was – I'm serious. He was not going to get enough vacation. That was the rationale behind turning down the job. And I was there for 2 years and pretty much wrote all features. And then I got hired at Yahoo. And for the first, like, 6-7 years, wrote pretty much all features. But at some point, I recognized at the distinct urging of my wife that you better have a job because we have kids. and that was like, well, what is the easiest way to maintain a job in media in back then? It was 2011, 2012. And it was clear at that point with what Woj had done in becoming an expert on a single sport and not going after that general column job that I think to all of us in the industry had been important. Sticking with that one sport was the path to that. And relevance these days is measured by breaking news. I'm not going to say that's right. I'm not going to say that's wrong. It's just a reality.
Does it kind of feel like maybe this is a terrible example, but John Smoltz talks all the time about how he wanted to play football and basketball and baseball, and he's a scratch golfer, and sort of having dipped his feet into all these different sports helped make him a better baseball player because he was allowed to have a little bit more freedom early on before eventually deciding on the path that he wanted to go. Is that something that you feel like can almost be applied to the way in which journalism is going, that it's good early on to be covering a lot of different avenues? Or do you also think that because there's so much more news being broken, that there's more ways and more avenues to get information out, that from a very early age, maybe you do have to pick a lane and stay with it?
I think if you don't specialize, then you better be really, really, really good. Like Dan Wetzel does not have to specialize in something, because he's a remarkable journalist and has as good of a sense of what works on the internet as anyone I've ever met.
Like even from an early age, Jeff, like in college, in your early stages of writing, or are you just looking for the right opportunity to then specialize?
No. Here's where I think you specialize. I don't think you go into the industry believing that you should cover a sport if you have come up through a journalism school, if you've come up learning to report. Because the thing is, you can report on baseball, you can report on football, you can report on cops, you can report on the entertainment industry, you can report on political corruption. You can report, if you know how to report, if you know the right questions to ask, if you know the right way to make relationships and have people trust you and to seek out information and the truth, you can do anything you want. But in the sports media landscape, there comes a point at which specialization really can help take you to that next level. I think when you're a beat writer, you can go I could take a baseball beat writer, throw him or her on football tomorrow, and believe that person is going to be effective doing that, and vice versa. But long term, the large scale jobs, the national job at ESPN, at Yahoo, the senior writer job at Sports Illustrated, it's very difficult to not have a specialization and end up in one of those jobs, because those jobs entail, more than anything else, knowing the landscape of the sport and understanding what's actually going on at any given time.
You said Gary Smith was one of those people that you wanted to be initially early on. Did you ever get a chance to talk to him? Did you ever get a chance to learn from him or any other early heroes in your sports journalism background?
I met Gary Smith once, and he was like the nicest guy in the world, and I didn't say anything because I'm such a loser. I mean, he was very nice to me, and maybe I did like fumble over my words. It felt like very Chris Farley show.
You remember that one time when you wrote that feature on Muhammad Ali? That was awesome.
Hey, that Richie Parker story was awesome, man. You know, Rick Reilly was so good back in the day, and I know that Rick Reilly's his reputation throughout the years, especially with like the audience who's probably reading Awful Announcing and listening to Awful Announcing, they know him as like the guy who makes dad jokes and stuff. Rick Reilly could write his ass off. Like, he was an incredible feature writer for SI, and SI was like, SI was the goods, man. Like, back in the 80s, in the 90s, and well beyond that. And that is not to diminish them in any way these days, because I still think Greg Bishop and Mike Rosenberg and Chris Ballard and Tom Ferducci and Steph Apstein and Ben Ryder, like, they have a lot of really good writers there still. But, you know, back then, SI was the monolith. Like, that was the place where you wanted to be. That was the place that ruled sports coverage.
I almost think, too, that we were talking about these transformation of where you go in writing and you go from feature writing into breaking news. It kind of felt like for Rick Reilly that he tried it and it just didn't work for him, and he kind of got lampooned along the way. Like, do you remember there was like an infamous clip from Monday Night Football postgame where he was saying, and it was a live mic, he said, "Make sure that you say that I broke this story." And that was never the Rick Reilly that we all knew reading on the back of Sports Illustrated. It almost felt like he was just uncomfortable in that role.
Yeah, it's a hard transition to make, and it was one that I wasn't sure, and frankly, still not 100%. Like, I still have those lingering doubts, and I think those doubts, you almost need to have them.
I agree with that.
To push you to be your best. Like, this is a job where complacency kills. And you know what? Maybe every job complacency kills, but this one in particular, like, the second you stop thinking that you have to work as hard as you did when you didn't know people, is when you're going to get killed. Like, the grind matters, and you got to put in the requisite work, or it's going to show, and it's going to clearly show.
Was Woj for you the first person that you saw turn this element of breaking news as sort of like this full-time job into it? Do you look at Woj right now and say that's the best in the business right now, or is it Schefter? I mean, you're going up against guys like Ken Rosenthal and John Heyman. Is there anybody that you sort of look at who maybe got a head start in this space and said, man, that person is damn good, and that's who I strive to be yet if more?
Rosenthal for a long time has been the standard bearer in baseball, and rightfully so, because he gets things right. He does it ethically, like he's a good person. Like, he is somebody to whom I've looked up for a very long time, and I've long joked with him and with Woj that I'm doing what I'm doing because they did what they do so well. And if they hadn't been the archetypes, I don't know that I end up going on this path. I even as recently as a few years ago, I wasn't expecting to be doing what I'm doing now. And I don't think back then, if you had asked me, I would have wanted to be doing what I'm doing now. But over time, I've really learned to enjoy it a lot more. And I don't know if I, as much as others who do this, enjoy the chase, enjoy the win. I tend to be a very even-keeled person. And so when I get a story, I try not to get too excited about it. When I get beat on a story, I try not to get too particularly down about it, because that, you know, the highs and lows just do not fit my way of living. Like, if I'm living like that, I'm going to have a pit in my stomach all the time and be miserable. And so I think I figured out over time a way to make the job fit me and to make myself fit the job and to find that happy medium where I'm satisfied doing what I'm doing, where I don't feel like it's vacuous at all. Because I think the perception among some, both inside the media and those who are sort of looking from the outside and keeping track, is that it's a waste of time to go and get scoops that are going to be confirmed within 30 seconds or 3 minutes or whatever it may be. On the contrary, the chase to get information like that leads you down so many different avenues to so many better stories and bits of information that others would say have more substance, that it has made me a far, far, far better reporter doing what I'm doing now than I was beforehand.
That's really interesting, because the news is then sort of opening up to the story to be told, as opposed to 100%. Trying to develop a topic and then chasing the news behind the story.
Yeah, it's.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
It allows you to understand what's going on before it happens rather than recreate it after it happened. And that knowledge of what's going on when it's happening gives you the time to sit back and contextualize it and say, not just is this happening, but why is this happening? And it allows you to ask questions that may give you a better sense of why it's happening. And that, to me, is where the in-the-moment reporting really showcases itself, when you can tell the story of why quicker than you might have been able to otherwise.
Speaking of telling the story, you had 13 really good years at Yahoo. Who are you going to miss the most in working there? And what stories can you share from, you know, the people that you were around, whether it be, you know, something from the recent, you know, Yahoo Baseball podcast to your adventures in writing a book with Dan Wetzel? I heard a few of them when we were together on the Fantasy Sports Markets podcast, but do any in particular stick out that the Awful Announcing fans would want to hear from?
Clearly, like, I have a man crush on Wetzel, so that was kind of obvious from earlier.
Mike
on.
Trout and Dan Wetzel, what a dynamic threesome that
yes,
would be.
My Mount Rushmore, Mike Trout, Dan Wetzel.
And a case of Busch Light.
Exactly. I worked with Tim Brown my entire time there, and he's an incredibly good teammate. He is very generous. He's thoughtful. He's kind. He's funny as hell. And he can do pull-ups with like 50-pound weights around his waist, and Tim is in like his mid-50s now, so he's I hate him, I really do, because I want to be able to do pull-ups with 50 pounds around my waist. You know, Mike Oz, a guy who I worked with in Fresno when I was 21, getting to work with him for the last 5 years. Pat Forty is awesome, and Pete Thamel and Johnny Ludden, who really runs the ship around there and for a long time has done so admirably. And I hope everyone at Yahoo finds the greatest success, because that place treated me really well and prepared me for this. And when I told them I was going, they could not have been any nicer about it. And that was important to me, because when you spend that much time and get to know people that well, I'm not the type of person who wants to have like an ugly divorce. And I was worried about that. I was worried they were going to say, "Oh, screw you, you sell out. You know, go to ESPN, be on TV, take your fancy hair there." But no, they were incredibly cool, and I will forever remember doing the book with Wetzel and just being in awe of his intellect and covering the Olympics with him and with Pat Forty in walking back through a just driving miserable rainstorm and getting lost with Pat Forty and going up to these guards who were the only people between us and this bus that we needed to get onto. There was this bus through this gate, and these armed guards who we were convinced we were going to die that night because the armed guards at the swimming complex were going to murder us. And we were not able to speak their language.
Which Olympics was this?
This was in Rio.
Okay.
in 2016, I believe. And we were covering swimming, and Pat's a brilliant swimming writer, because Pat's wife was like a really good swimmer, and Pat's three kids all are college swimmers, and his youngest, Brooke, might actually be an Olympian in Tokyo. Like she swims with Katie Ledecky at Stanford right now.
Oh wow.
So Forty knows swimming better than anybody out there, and we were always the last ones out of the press box because we're obnoxious, and deep down we still fancy ourselves like writers, and we want to write something really good that people are going to wake up and read the next morning. And so we got out of there late in a driving rainstorm. We got totally lost. Before we went up to the guards, I reached into my bag, and I don't remember exactly. It might have been a bag of chips or something that I was going to try to bribe them with to get through, or it might have been like a pão de queijo, which is like a bread and cheese pocket. Like it was something really pathetic for trying to get by these armed guards. But eventually we made it onto the bus and dried off probably like 2 hours later. Not a good time.
No, but at least you didn't die.
At least we didn't die. Listen, this podcast would not be happening right now if we had died. So I feel good about that.
I as do I, because these are the forces that bring us together. I want to get your thoughts on a couple of these major baseball stories before I let you go, before you do your several different ESPN hits over the course of the day. You reported, and we're taping this on late Monday, late morning, early afternoon, that Kyler Murray had met with the Oakland A's on Sunday, that there were specific dollar figures not really discussed. There was a report that maybe it was going to take $15 million for him to be able to stay with baseball. I guess that doesn't really matter that much to me. More so, I think that if the A's can convince Murray to stay within baseball, that this is just a win of epic proportions for the sport. And I wonder, too, because so many times the fan base, for whatever reason, it's always been mind-boggling to me that when they tend to gravitate towards that of ownership as opposed to the player. And I wonder in this situation, even with somebody who is as likable and who is as interesting as Kyler Murray, do you think he will be remembered in a positive way if he does choose baseball in this particular situation?
Well, I think it depends if Kyler Murray is successful or not. I think if Kyler Murray turns into a successful professional baseball player, then it's difficult to question his motivations or his decision. But I think if it turns out like Drew Henson, it's a completely different story. And look, there are going to be people who are second-guessing Kyler Murray. He is going to be, if he chooses baseball, one of the most scrutinized players. And we talk about how Tim Tebow gets some – no. Kyler Murray is going to be a completely different level because Kyler Murray actually could be a quarterback in the NFL right now. Like that is what evaluators in the NFL are saying. Kyler Murray could be an NFL quarterback right now. And if that's the case, turning that down to go play center field in Stockton, California, like, boy, oh, boy, that is a difficult leap to make, but one that clearly, if he does so, he will have to be compensated for, and understandably, because he's got an alternative route right now that's pretty, pretty interesting.
Do you think, though, that if he does choose baseball, that maybe the rest of his teammates might be frustrated by that decision? I think ultimately you're right. The success will dictate how we view him long term. But
yeah,
this is a guy.
100%. But you know what? First round draft picks tend to come in with that already anyway, because Kyler Murray's been guaranteed $4.66 million. He's going to be the guy who, you know, when he's riding the bus, is going to be doing so with the best headphones. And he's going to have the cool, you know, laptop in front of him where he can play Fortnite. And he's going to have all of like the creature comforts that guys who sign for $1,000 or $10,000 or whatever it may be just don't have.
Is that just the business of it, or is that just sort of an indication of?
It is. And I, you know, I really wonder if he does sign how important it's going to be for him to be part of the team. Like, is that going to be a priority of Kyler Murray, or is the priority going to be getting on track so he can actually play baseball? Because he's coming from quite a ways back. I mean, he doesn't have much baseball experience at all, especially at a higher level. And the idea that they're going to drop him into high A and he's going to take off running, that's a decided risk and a calculated risk by the Oakland A's.
Do you know the timeline in which the A's went from feeling like we got this guy in the bag when we drafted him to, all right, well, we'll let him play football and then we know that he's coming back, to being legitimately fearful that he wouldn't return to the organization?
I think the middle of the football season, when he was starting to show up on Heisman Trophy lists, they're like, uh-oh. But even as recently as like a month ago, you know, I still think they thought that, hey, he's 5'9". Who's going to take him in the draft? There's never been a quarterback that short aside from Doug Flutie.
And right.
Doug Flutie was kind of a freak. Well, Kyler Murray's kind of a freak, too.
The other stories that have been pretty compelling, and, you know, kudos to Major League Baseball and Manny Machado and Bryce Harper for waiting for you to get to ESPN, so maybe you'd have the opportunity to break these stories. And you did offer on ESPN that the White Sox have offered Manny Machado an 8-year deal that could possibly go longer. It's not necessarily about where Machado goes and where Bryce Harper goes, but now we're seeing two consecutive years of stalemate free agency where we're just waiting and we're waiting. And
did you say stalemate?
Did I say the wrong word? That tends to happen.
Did you mean stalemate?
Stalemate, yeah. Come on, okay. you've done this long enough with me to know that I'm bad at words.
I know, but oh, you totally botch words. But it's my it's my job to then point them out so we could kind of laugh at you.
Okay, so there. So we have 2 years of this now, and I guess at what point does the Players Association start to say, the hell, man? Like, what's going on, and is there anything they can do about this?
Last year, the Players Association started to say, what the hell, but the basic agreement is the basic agreement, and it's one that they signed, and it's one I think ultimately they regret for a number of reasons. But I don't think it's the entirety of the driving force behind this. I think that Major League Baseball teams have shifted pretty apparently how they do business. And that shift in business has led to a demonstrable depression of the free agent market and one that shows no end in sight, whether it's at the top end, the bottom end, or particularly in the middle. It's those middle guys who are getting squeezed the most because teams are looking at this and saying, if I can get a guy from my minor league system who's going to be 80% as good as a guy who's going to cost $5 million a year, or let's even say $3 million a year, why am I going to go with that guy when the math tells me to go with the cheaper one. Now, that's why you see prices being driven down to $2 million, because suddenly at that point, you can maybe make an argument that the marginal excess in wins above replacement that you're getting through the guy who's better is actually worth that price. But man, that is a tough argument to make with so many general managers and presidents of baseball operations these days who are thinking practically the same. And I don't know that that's collusion. There's no evidence that there's collusion. It would be remarkably stupid of owners and front offices to collude these days, because it just feels like they can get what they want to get done without having to collude.
Is it a fixable system, though? Is this just something that the players are going to have to wait for the next collective bargaining agreement to come out and say, okay, like there needs to be a new change in system from the minor leagues up to fix this and to sort of, I don't know what they do, but have you talked to anybody within the Players Association that said, this is what we'd like to do as far as a potential fix down the road?
I think they're looking at 2021 at this point. I don't think the basic agreement's going to be reopened midterm. They'll do that for smaller things, but for something as big and universal with as many tentacles as it has in as many places, the complications in doing so just make that nearly impossible. And further, I don't know that the relationship between MLB and the union at this point is good enough for anything to get done. Like there is animus on both sides. The union feels like MLB has gone after something in free agency, which was its linchpin. MLB feels like the union is intransigent and not willing to come to the table and talk about what it really wants. So, they need a marriage counselor right now, and they need to figure it out, because 2021 is inching closer and closer, and nobody, and I mean nobody, benefits from a work stoppage.
All right, last thing from me, and I appreciate your time. It's always good to have these catch-up opportunities like we have so many times in the past. You and I have spent so many times on the Fantasy Sports Markets podcast going through the different ways in which baseball can improve their relationships with their fans, that they can grow to a younger audience, that they can make the game not necessarily more sped up or faster, but just more enjoyable and different and unique. We've talked about our love for the dynamic strike zone. Are you starting to see more ways in which baseball is trying to take advantage of these newfound ideas? Do you feel like it's going to be a sport that embraces their youth in the not-too-distant future? Is that still a whiles away as well?
I believe the word that you're looking for here is gambling. And I'm being serious when I say that. I think that gambling is going to be an entree into a younger audience that baseball has not had. And that the sport needs to very carefully and judiciously figure out its strategy in the space, because it has the opportunity to gain back a generation of fans it never has had.
Thank you, Jeff. Always fun.
Pleasure is always mine, Benny. Thanks for having me, bud.
You bet.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.